Hello, and welcome to the Creative Shift podcast. We're going to revive our interview season by always making sure we have somebody who is having a really interesting time and undergoing some form of creative shift. And to kick that season of interviews off, I'm really delighted to welcome Corey Baker of Corey Baker Dance. Corey, hello.
Hi, Helga.
So, Corey, just to kick off, why don't you tell us a little bit about you and about Corey Baker Dance?
Sure. So, I come from New Zealand originally, where I got into acting at a very young age and just loved the idea of performing and being a part of a magical world that allowed audiences to switch off for just a couple of hours. And I guess it was that notion and that ethos that is what's carried me right through my career as a performer. I quickly moved into dancing, where I was actually lucky enough that my English teacher at high school was a ballet teacher outside of school, and she noticed that I was acting and said, you know, dancing would really help. And she came up to me and was like, okay, come to, she gave me sort of a real twist of fate, come to my ballet classes after school, and if you do, I'll pass you in English. So I can't spell very well now, but I've had a lovely career in dance. That kickstarted my training in full-time ballet in New Zealand. And then I went over to Australia and finished my training before going to Switzerland, where I danced in a big neoclassical company for about 2.5 years before moving to the States to dance with some other companies. And then I moved here to the UK about 8 years ago, where I sort of filtered into the contemporary dance scene and dancing with some amazing UK choreographers and companies, while sort of finding my feet as a choreographer.
Cool. So what caused, if you like, the shift? Or what tipped you now into forming and launching, on a formal basis, Corey Baker Dance?
I guess it was twofold. The one was an ambition and a passion to create. I am naturally exceptionally creative and am happiest when I'm doing that. And being in the environment where I was being created on was only stimulating that want to a certain extent. And then the second fold was other people noticing that and seeing that it came from, I guess because it came from a real place, it came from me actually loving it and wanting to do it, as opposed to me putting a hat on and going, I'm a choreographer, I'm a dancer, and now I'm going to turn a choreographer. I think there's a real big difference from being a good dancer to a good choreographer. And I think that sort of happened, and people noticed my approach was different and filled a need within the industry of accessible and engaging work that made people smile, it made people laugh, it made people just basically engage with dance in a different way. And that also allowed a different audience, a different type of people to access it. You know, it's my work's never for the elite. It's not for people who can afford a £60 ticket to, you know, sit down in an amazing theatre. It's for people who are out on the streets and walking past, and then all of a sudden we bring to life something that's you know, on the street.
I'll go on to the sorts of work and the work that you're making, particularly this summer. But before that, so one of the shifts you've had to now make is, as you've said, you had choreographic lessons, but you also had business lessons. So putting you on the spot a bit, but what do you think are the sort of top three things that you've had to kind of get your head around business that you think anyone who runs a creative business might find useful?
I've got two off the top of my head, and so I'll talk through them and see if it inspires a third one. The first one was when you shift from being an individual who's got a passion for something to an individual with a demand of creating, producing, or then delivering whatever that product is. Sometimes it forces you to shift away from that individual love and passion, and it becomes not necessarily a job, but it does become, I've got to do this now, as opposed to, I really want to do this, and I'm so eagerly excited. Those aspects continually channel through everything you do. But an element of, I've got to do this now by 5 p.m. comes into play. And that was a shift. That was an understanding, okay, this is part of the business. And to combat that, I realized as an artist, it was really important to still be nourished.
Mm-hmm.
So it was important for me to understand I'm going to burn out by doing this. Like, our momentum happened very quickly. We did something and then it was like, bam. And then that's almost the problem of our industry as well. It's sometimes it's not sustainable and it just takes something really quickly. And I was forced to be everywhere and everything at one place. And I realized, well, this is not, that I can't do this. It's detrimental to them, my own well-being and my own work and the business. And I realized I need to put myself in a place where I am not completely in charge and being nourished by other people that are. So that's specifically just professional development. So I took a week out and went to another choreographer's studio and assisted on their show in a way where I was watching them, I was learning from them, I was gaining more skills. It was still benefiting my business, but I was feeding off someone, I was being inspired. The other point is emotion. Is that when it's your own business, when it is your own, and especially I think as an artist or as a creative, what you do is you love. It's somehow we've been fortunate enough that our hobby and our love and our passion has consumed our life and turned into a business. And therefore, you're very passionate and involved in every decision and every thought that you do. And to be shut down or to find the business angles being negative or disagreed can be really hurtful and upsetting. And I had a big, notable coming of age moment where I was like, I have to separate this from my own personal emotions and treat this as a business transaction, which was really hard. And it took me about a year to learn. And I still find myself sitting in a meeting going, don't bite into this, Corey. This is business.
Yeah.
You know, and again, it's finding that right balance. Sometimes it is about my emotional connection is actually what's going to transform this into a successful project or a successful deal. But at some points, no, this is about you and I talking about business.
Yeah. So picking that up, it sounds very much like something I've heard from a lot of creative business owners, and that by which I mean all sorts of businesses where creativity is important. So one is to never stop feeding that creative part of yourself by whatever means, because that's the thing that powered the business in the first place, and it will quickly bleed you dry if you don't.
Yeah.
And the second is a shift in perspective, I would call that.
Yeah.
It's exactly that tightrope between what I'd say is passion and detachment.
Yeah.
The sufficient passion, as you say, nurtured by all that support, that keeps you true to your artistic vision, but enough wisdom or detachment to make a savvy business decision and not an emotional,
irrational at times.
Yeah, non-business one. And business, you know, rationality isn't always in business. There's a lot of passion in business, but there's times that you need to, as you say, put the foot on the brake and not take it as personally, because to an extent you are taking the product of your creativity and turning it into a product. And that, by definition, you can't sell pieces of yourself, because there'd be none of you left. So there is that. I think that's true. And then just in terms of business, those are about how to take care of your creativity in business. And what do you think is the sort of pointiest business skill that you've had to kind of learn or get your head around?
If I'm going to be really honest, it's two things. It's the emotion thing, that absolute detachment, figuring out when that is necessary. Because I think you hit it on the head with the making irrational approaches or saying irrational things, especially I guess with the dance world, our names are the company. So there's this real weird attachment to you as a person as well.
And I
can imagine, you know, singers or bands or anyone, or you know, if I mean, it sounds awfully narcissistic when you, I hate saying that it's Corey Baker Dance. I absolutely hate it. But for some reason, there's a trend in the industry that's how it works. But it's not Corey Baker Dance. And this is the second point to that question. It's a team of people and collaborators that I had to learn how to manage. So I had to learn how to manage people administrating the work that I'm doing.
Yeah.
And I had never done that before. I can manage dancers, I can manage, you know, production managers, I can manage lighting designers, I can manage all these creative people, because I know that we have the same goal. I know their specific roles. And then, in transforming into an office environment where I need to manage people was difficult. It was really difficult. And actually, I overcame it with realizing it's the exact same thing. We need to be working to the same goal. And that's about the right information, the right inspiration to hone our delivery, I guess.
And I think that's, again, that's very common where people have got what is essentially a personality-led brand, that you take aspects, again, it's not you, but you take aspects of your personality, and in particular, I think, your vision and values.
Yeah.
And that's what you get everybody to line up behind.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important. So, Corey, I won't take any more of your time because I know actually you're in the we're in the rehearsal studio as we speak, and you've got an afternoon of rehearsals to go. But to wrap up, just tell us briefly what you have in store for the summer, and what we should be looking out for from Corey Baker Dance.
This summer we've got three shows on. One is a comical outdoor solo called Headphones. It's popping up around festivals all over the UK. It brings to life every type of style of music you can imagine. Has audience interaction, is absolutely hilarious, if I do say so myself. And then we have another outdoor show called Haka Day Out, and that is bringing the native New Zealand Maori culture to life through a medley of the art form, which is, you know, poi, those strings with a ball on it, taiaha, which is the sticks, so weaponry dancing, native tribal footwork, and of course the famous haka. And you even get your own chance to learn the haka in that show. So Haka Day Out is touring festivals, and there's also actually programmed as cultural content in the Rugby World Cup. So it will be at fan zones all over the country. And then if you see that, do look out for the theatre show that's aligned with that called Kapaka Te, which is a full-length family show in a theatre that brings to life a famous New Zealand story with an enchanting and beautiful set and great choreography, if I can say that.
You can. So, Headphones, outdoor piece popping up unexpectedly at various festivals. Kapa Haka Tales, which is the
theatre.
That's the theatre piece. And the Haka Day Out, which, as you say, you kind of very, either cleverly or whatever, spotted that opportunity of looking at rugby, Maori culture, the haka, and contemporary dance, and blending them in a really interesting way. And I think that's clearly part of what's going to launch or be a really important part of your work this summer. So thank you so much for your time. Thanks for telling us about your creative shift, Corey. We look forward very much to seeing you and your work in the years to come. And have a great summer. Many thanks.
Thank you, Abigail. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Shift podcast. Join us next time for more insight, conversation and opinion. Bye.